I know I've given this talk before. It's one that I come back to quite often, but I think every time I come around, sort of like, it's sort of like the, turning the screw one more time or coming around, the threads of a screw, you kind of come back to the same thing, but you're not quite in the same place again. And so my hope is that this will flesh out some more aspects, more reflections on what's going on, and we'll see how up to being theatrical I am in terms of this is sort of like a what I've written down I could present as like a dialogue with myself. So as we know, meditation is it's the core and the foundation of our practice. And it's the what we call the mind of meditation, sort of continuing that core of our practice that we bring into the rest of our day as best we can. And one way of looking at it, the way I'm going to look at it today, is that what it's doing is that it's teaching us basically, a whole new way of being with ourselves. And so, most of what I want to talk about this morning is what that new way is. And of course, the new way, the what I'm calling the new way, it's all relative to what it was like for many of us, most of us, before we started a meditation practice. So before we started a meditation practice, and certainly a huge percent of the time after starting a meditation practice, during our waking day, we basically, this is a funny way of putting it, but basically we do things with ourselves. So most of our waking day is doing things. And, a big portion of that is work, paid or otherwise, but we're doing things with our bodies, we're doing things with our minds. When we're interacting with other people, interacting is we're doing things. And I don't know about the rest of you, but when I have dreams, I seem to be doing a lot of stuff in my dreams too. So this doing thing is very prevalent in kind of the normal way that we go about doing things. But in meditation, what we're doing is we're taking time to be with ourselves, to experience who we are and what is there. So there's very much a contrast between doing versus being. Now, like this morning, all of you, it's not always the case, but all of you hopped in a car, drove here, came in the door, some point walked over, sat yourselves down in a very specific posture. That was all doing also. So there's the getting yourself to meditation and seating yourself in meditation, which is still very much a doing. But then, with any luck, at that point, there's this switch or this transition to, experiencing who we are, being with what's there. One other thing to just kind of highlight and bring up too is that a lot of us, or at least a lot of people, they want to do meditation so they can become enlightened, or any other way you want to phrase that. You could use a different word other than enlightenment. And fair enough. I mean, pretty much probably 9 out of 10 books that you open on Buddhism, they're going to talk about something about enlightenment or something of that sort. But in Zen Buddhism, the approach that we take, the path to enlightenment, is to be with ourselves first. That's where it all starts. So just reflect on the week just passed for each and every one of you. And the meditation that you've done this past week, either taking the time to sit down and meditate, or the times that you've just very consciously brought to mind, wanting to bring that mind of meditation to whatever's going on. What's really important is to see within that, and I think sometimes we really overlook this or don't give ourselves enough credit for it, but to sit down with ourselves and be with ourselves as we are, that's, we're being very caring to ourselves. We're really expressing the fact that we feel that we are worthwhile being with. We're important. We're valuing ourselves. I don't know about the rest of you. I'm guessing it might be similar, but I usually tend not to put a lot of time and effort into being with stuff I don't like being with. So the degree to which you actually are willing to sit down and spend time meditating is really an expression of care for yourself, an expression of valuing yourself. And add a few other things to that is that to engage in, to continue with a meditation practice, what we're really doing is over time is we're regarding ourselves in a positive way. Now, my usual impishness has to say, if you don't want to value yourself or care for yourself, stop meditating right now. Because if you keep meditating, it's just going to happen. You're going to become more positive towards yourself, and you're going to become more caring towards yourself. So yes, again, in our tradition, we really emphasize, over the long term. And so as we do carry on with this, you are expressing more value in yourself. You're expressing value in yourself more. You're expressing caring for yourself more. You're being more positive to yourselves. So to be with ourselves is to come to know ourselves. Okay, here's where I have to kick into theatrical mode and read from the script here. So in other words, it's like, oh, Reverend Hugh, so those are the things going on in your head. Or, oh, those are the emotions that you're feeling right now. Or that's how your body feels, eh? And that's literally what's happening when we're sitting down and meditating. And as that care for ourselves, as that valuing ourselves increases, it quite naturally becomes, this wish to be shown more, to experience more. Sort of like, yes, I'm interested in myself. Yes, I care. I'll try to be more open. Please show me more of who you are. And this is putting words to something that quite naturally is happening by doing meditation over the long term. And again, because we don't voice it very often, we sometimes, don't notice that these are some of the things that are actually going on that we're actually, that are actually developing and so on. So saying to ourselves, yes, I care about you. Yes, I value you. Be more positive about ourselves. That's a very, very significant part of what compassion is. So the definition of one of the ways of sort of translating what compassion means is it's fellow feeling, sympathy or empathy. It's actually feeling or experiencing for oneself what's going on in ourself. And usually it's applied to other people, but in this case, we're sticking with ourselves. It's like, oh, so that's what's going on in your mind. That must be really challenging. That must be really hard. Or, oh, so that's what your body feels like a lot of the time. That must be difficult, or that must be challenging. Or equally, okay, so those are the emotions that are coming up and go and so on. And again, it's, oh, that's pretty strong. It's pretty intense. That must be kind of work. And then equally, it can be, in addition, as that compassion grows, that caring and kindness grows, we can also, oh, I'm sorry that's going on for you. I'm sorry that illness is there. I'm sorry that that's what happened to you in your life, or I'm sorry that that's what happened as you were growing up. So to me, this is putting words to what we're actually expressing, what we're engendering when we carry on with meditation. Because there's a kind of a gentleness that's growing in us. There's an opening. There's a warmth to ourselves. And of course that embodies, kindness and caring, and yeah, we are sorry that that's what's going on. Now, as we continue in this process, and as we become more conscious or aware that we really are expressing, care and concern for ourselves, one of the things we come across too is that we realize we have to start doing this. We become conscious that we have to do it unconditionally, in the sense that, or another way of saying that is that we learn that we have to put down and stop judging ourselves. Because what's there is what's there. It's what happened. And we see, again through trial and error, that there might be some things that we approved of or like, felt good about, but then there's this whole other area of, what about that stuff? Are we gonna, in essence, just block this whole part of ourselves out? Are we going to cut it off? Are we going to say, oh, I don't care about those things that happened to you. I don't care about those things. I don't feel sorry about those things. And I'm kind of expressing it in a very black and white way, but that's something that arises for all of us, is that there are things that have happened in our past, either to us or things that we've done, that are, kind of hard to be with. But over time, we realize that the way forward is, yes, I need to take a look at that. I need to kind of allow that to come out into the open again more. So we've done it a few times this year, but when we recite the rules for meditation that was written by Great Master Dogen, there's the one line of think of neither good nor evil, consider neither right nor wrong. And that's his way of saying right there, it's like everything that arises in meditation, everything that we are, everything that's there, it's neither good nor bad, nor right nor wrong. It just simply is there. And our first and foremost thing is to, in a very kind, open, caring way, just sort of say, come, you know, show yourself more. Let me see what's there. And so we can describe that, you know, over time in a very general way, is that we develop the willingness to be shown anything. Nothing's beyond the pale. And what's interesting is that oftentimes we really are, by our meditation practice, cultivating, we're actually growing and developing this kindness, this caring, this non-judgmental, unconditional positiveness about ourselves. And monks, back when I was at Shasta Abbey, would speak of things just coming out of left field. The term for we're that way to a significant part of ourselves, and then because of our openness and our kindness and caring, sometimes something will just arise that we just didn't even know was there. We had no sense of it. Well, you know, when it comes out of left field, it can kind of really take us by surprise. And yet, because of all of the cultivating we've doing prior to that, it's like, okay, I need to bring that kindness and caring and non-judgmentalism to that as well. So what I've just been talking about are sort of the beginning aspects, we're actually starting to move into what we talk about as spiritual love. Compassion is an open receiving of things. You know, it's acknowledging, it's seeing, it's experiencing what is there. But there's this very natural deepening process that occurs, and that deepening is into what we call spiritual love. And spiritual love, as opposed to just being receptive, it's actually much more dynamic. It's much more interactive. There's much more of a give and take with spiritual love. And that give and take, you know, as I've kind of been sort of awkwardly trying to convey, it kind of takes the form of a dialogue within ourselves. So I just, you know, as I was writing up these notes, I just came up with three things that are very near and dear to me, and in the sense of coming over time to know what I'm like and what's going on there. So here's spiritual love. I notice when you really want something and you don't get it, you get really sad, and even really sad, so you get really dysfunctional. So another thing is, oh, I notice when someone raises their voice and speaks firmly and strongly at you, you get really nervous and fearful and aren't able to voice your view. I notice when your body is hurting a lot in that particular way, you tend not to eat very well. Or you tend to stay up too late watching too much TV. And I hope my throwing in TV is indicative that I'm dating it to pre-computer stuff, back when we had those very primitive things called TVs. So the reason it's so spiritual love is saying, yes, I see, you know, this going on in your mind, this going on in your emotions, this going on in your body. But then it's also saying, oh, I see that then you do this, that, or the other thing. So it's taking a fuller perspective. And then the way it's come up for me is that spiritual love then says, so again, you know, the things I just tried to narrate, it's still very much in the vein of very caring. It's also not judging things. It's simply trying to state things as they happen, you know, as they're seen. You know, and I could just counter with, you know, it's like, well, no, it's not quite that way. Fair enough. But then spiritual love takes another step and it says, are you okay with that? Are you okay with, for example, staying up too late, not getting enough sleep? Because probably what could be added in there is, oh, I notice how you feel the next morning. Am I okay with getting really, really sad? So, as I've mentioned, compassion is it's being very receptive. It's being willing to experience what's going on in our bodies and minds. An equally appropriate way of describing that, though, is that it's passive. And it's seeing from the point of view of we're recipients of what's happening to us, of what we're feeling. Spiritual love, though, being more dynamic, is that it advocates for us. It pushes back. So, like, for example, we could say, so like when I asked myself, am I okay with that? I've told this story before, but I was a novice monk at Shasta Abbey. I had just finished kitchen cleanup after lunch. We do all the dirty dishes after lunch, and I was walking somewhere in the cloister, and I was really, really angry, just kind of seething. And at one point, I stopped myself and said, a slight variant of, are you okay with this? I said, do you like this? I'll leave that dangling there for a minute. So, with the statement, I said, are you okay with that? And then the response might be, oh, it's okay. I'm fine. Well, spiritual love might say, I don't know about that. It seems to me like there's more going on there. There's more, you still seem kind of upset about that. Sort of like, it seems like there's more than you're letting on to. Or spiritual love might say, well, okay, fair enough. You're okay with it. But I'm not okay with it. In other words, you deserve more, or you're worth it. Or you may be okay with it, but you shouldn't put up with that. And hopefully, so spiritual love is a really interesting thing. And I'm specifically keep calling it spiritual love for partly because of just the experience we've had, in teaching these things in the order. Spiritual love, I call it spiritual love to make it distinct from kind of just the regular word love that we encounter, because there are similarities, but there are also differences, and some quite important differences. So all of those things that I just said, if it's really spiritual love, should be reassuring ourselves that we're not judging ourselves. We still care about ourselves. We're still trying to be very kind, and that we're very willing to continue seeing everything that's there. And, that we won't judge, we won't turn away from ourselves. And again, one of the reasons we talk about, in our form of Zen Buddhism about the long term is because this is what grows gradually. Have I judged myself since starting meditation? Heck yes. Have I been uncaring about myself? But you keep doing meditation practice, and spiritual love, as it were, keeps saying, well, let's take a look at this again. Let's see what's more of what's going on here. So, in a certain way, compassion and spiritual love are kind of looking at sort of two different layers, sort of two different areas within ourselves. And just out of necessity for a talk like this, I present it sequentially, present it like a, as we've all seen, a beautiful plant growing from a seed. But in our practice, and just given the the incredible complexity of who we are as human beings, sort of in the main, it heads in this direction, but it's kind of all over the place. Sometimes we need to, invoke a little more spiritual love. Sometimes we need to invoke a little more compassion. Sometimes we even just need to get to the point of, okay, I'm willing to look at this, I'll try. So not be, try to work on not judging ourselves and so on. And so there may be times when because of the promptings of spiritual love, we may actually be able to say, yeah, I do get really upset when somebody who tends to be really verbally aggressive and domineering seems to not be interested in hearing what I have to say. Or, yeah, I get really upset that I get really nervous and kind of chicken out and don't say what was on my mind. Or, for me, it's like kind of finally, over times coming out with saying, yes, I really do want this something that really is just part of my wiring. I do have, these wantings here. So this is where we get to, for those of you who've read, listened to some of Reverend Master Jiyu's teachings, this is where, in order to proceed, as it were, in our spiritual practice, this is where we need to bring in wisdom as well. So we've got compassion, love, and wisdom. And Reverend Master Jiyu used to say, it's in writing in Zen is Eternal Life, and she would say it a number of other times. And this was very much from her frame of reference, back in the late 60s, in the 70s, early 80s in particular. That was kind of her, that's when she was really presenting so much of her teachings. She said over and over again, I mean, Buddhism came to the West. It's sort of debatable or discussable as to kind of how it started transitioning into American society, but it was starting to, there was a bit of a groundswell in the late 60s, kind of a real big golden era in the 70s. People got exposed to Zen Buddhism, through Alan Watts. Oh, Dharma Bums, what's his name, Gary Snyder, Shunryu Suzuki, San Francisco Zen Center, and this is more West Coast. There was just a whole other stuff going on the East Coast in New York City and other areas. Insight Meditation up in Maine, I believe. Back in those days, everybody wanted enlightenment. That's the point of Buddhism, right? And another way of saying that is everybody wanted wisdom. So everybody, well, this is from a certain perspective, everybody wanted to jump to that first. But what's really, really important to remind ourselves of is that from the Soto Zen Buddhist perspective, from its teaching, each and every one of us, we are the vehicle. We are the doorway to enlightenment. You have to pass through yourself. It has to be through yourself that you find enlightenment. And so it all begins with compassion for ourselves. It all begins with caring and valuing ourselves. All begins with not judging ourselves and that willingness to keep opening up to the fullness of what's there within us. Now, so here I am, sort of in my own version of it, stomping down the cloister, really, really angry. And this novel question comes up, do you like this? I mean, it really did seem novel. It's sort of this spiritual love popping in there and so how are you with that? And my answer was, well, I don't like it. And I'll leave it at that for now. Add this other bit in. We're going to ease into wisdom just a little bit because I don't want to detract from the extreme, the incredible importance of we always need to just keep coming back to the compassion and the spiritual love. Just keep coming back to that. That's the way forward. That's the doorway. So spiritual love says, I know you're sad when you don't get something, but then I've also noticed that for years and years and years, you've tried to get that something. And from my perspective, tallying it all up, you almost never get it. You never, almost never get that something. Or in other words, I keep noticing that when you go after that something, you don't succeed. So, still caring, still not judging. But it doesn't look to me like it works. This going after this something, this acting on this wanting, it doesn't seem to work. Maybe we need to kind of take a step back here. Maybe we need to sort of think outside the box here. Maybe we have to kind of look at the initial premises that this wanting is sort of built on. And spiritual love says, are you game to kind of look at that a bit more? Look at the initial conditions or look at the initial premise. So again, that's, as I said, spiritual love is pushing back on ourselves. It's sort of, it's having a dialogue with us. It's not just one-sided in the sense of, okay, I'm just willing to be here and experience what's in your mind and in your emotions and in your body. And it's like, well, that's a really important starting place. And it's like, oh, but by the way, what about all this other stuff? So the story about my stomping down the cloister, being angry, spiritual love asking me asking myself, do you like this? My response was a very, very strong no, I don't like this. And then the response seemed to be, well, why don't you let go of it? And quite fascinatingly, and I think it was in proportion to the fact that I really, really didn't like it, and I just don't do anger really well anyway. I've just never learned that stuff very well. Kind of in a nutshell, it was like, oh, just drop it then. I was like, oh, okay. And I did. I just let go of keeping that ball rolling. Now, I mean, that was great. That was really clear cut and very clean. It's almost never like that. And I think I've what done enough narrating here for you to kind of get the gist of the direction. I don't want to, fill it up with the narration that's gone on even further within myself about it's like, well, one little sample. It's like, yeah, you're right. It is because I have a certain perspective on things. I have a certain leaning towards things. I have certain feelings about things that's why I want these things. But not willing to let go of those yet. But again, so it's sort of like if you do this practice and you keep doing this practice, your compassion for yourself, your spiritual love for yourself will continue to grow. And as those two things continue to grow, your wisdom will grow, and you'll end up having much more of a dynamic interaction with yourself. You'll have some very quite amazing kind of insights arise. You'll have some thoughts that come up that are way outside the box, to the point of, oh, I never even thought of that. And then maybe over time, it's like, that actually might even be a good idea. I've done a lot of I guess you'd say paraphrasing and maybe even translating, kind of in my own words, my own understanding of what River Master Jiyu presents in three chapters in the book Zen is Eternal Life. A heart of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, a heart of love, Samantabhadra, and then the heart of wisdom, Manjushri. And if you're interested in kind of taking it further, looking at some additional things that she says about these three areas, I heartily recommend taking a look at those three chapters. And she, again, just because of her experience, of her wisdom, she broadens it out much more. I've really kept it focused on our interaction with ourselves, which after all is really important. It's really special. But again, you might find what I've talked about helpful in following some of the threads in those three chapters. What's interesting about spiritual love is that, I guess you'd say, some of its deeper aspects, deeper meaning, some of the aspects that have even more wisdom in them, and wisdom coming from that real, deeper perspective on just how this world we live in works. From the view that most of us have prior to coming to a spiritual practice, spiritual love can oftentimes be very misunderstood. We have compassion, which is, the willingness to just be with ourselves as we are. But then spiritual love, almost as it were, does a complete flip around, and it starts calling us on things, in a very caring, non-judgmental way. But it's like, see, every time you do this, you cause hurt for yourself. And spiritual love with wisdom in it, it's very, very deep love and care and concerning, because at the heart of it, it wishes us to not be suffering. It wishes us to be hurting in the deep sort of Buddhist sense of it. It's, we in compassion, we can say, it's okay, just keep doing that, and I will be there to experience, in my case, the sadness or the disappointment of not saying what I wanted to say. But then love says, well, hang on a minute. Maybe we can kind of address this more. Maybe there's something more that can be done here. And there is. Okay, leave it at that.